Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Straight and Level podcast, where we are dedicated to presenting you with the truth, the facts, and the opinions that matter to you the most as an American Airlines pilot. Whether you're senior, junior, or new hire, we thank you for tuning in to today's discussion. The fight for truth is officially weighed off wheels. Folks, thank you so much for tuning into today's podcast. We're going to start today's discussion with our first guest, Captain Robert Hamilton. Robert is a Charlotte 737 International captain who formerly flew for the company as an FO on the A320 and E190. Robert has a long, notable history of union volunteerism both at ALPA and APA. His service dates all the way back to 2006. When I say a long history, I'm literally looking at a list of organizations and committees that he's been involved with. The two most notable is the MEC Government Affairs Chair, and most recently he was on the APA ALPA Exploratory Committee. I feel that Robert has a lot of experience that he can share with us. So Robert, after reading some of the messaging that those who chose to reject the committee's findings put out, it appeared to me that they did not take the findings of the committee seriously when all was said and done. In the emails that were sent out, those emails were filled with mistruths, or at least they appeared to be mistruths when comparing the committee's report with their own personal reasons for rejecting the findings. I can only assume that they either did not address the report as a whole or at a deep level. The messaging came across such as that they already had made up their minds before the report was presented. What are your thoughts on this?
That's an excellent question, Garrett, and I want to thank you for asking that. Just to answer the statement you made about that it appeared that the board didn't really address at a deep level and just had kind of already made up their mind. To kind of walk through those issues, and this will kind of give you a little bit of a background to maybe understand it. So first off, the $68 million, what we come to the table with is what we get to keep. Does APA have $68 million on the other side of it? No, because the representation name is going to change. APA will no longer exist. It will go from the APA bank account to the American Airlines ALPA MEC account. So it changes account names, but it's the same. It's still our money. Now, within that discussion, there is something that ALPA has asked historically in their merger agreements, and that is a good faith contribution to the Master Contingency Fund. What the Master Contingency Fund is it's a $100 million fund, kind of like a war chest that ALPA has to, one, accomplish in-state negotiations, and then implementation of the contract. So for example, right now we are in-state negotiations. Our Family Awareness Committee, all of these different, our communications, all of these negotiations, all of these different departments are spending huge amounts of money to get us to the end stage. Well, what ALPA does is it says, hey, management, you want to mess around? We've got a $100 million war chest. Let's go to war. Do you want to play games or do you want to be a serious partner at the negotiating table? We're showing up to make a good faith contribution to that. Air Canada chose to make $1 million contribution, but we're making a contribution to a fund that we would immediately be able to pull back out from. Does that make sense? So the $68 million is ours and it stays ours unless we do two things. Merger fund, which is a smart idea in my humble opinion, and two, a master contingency fund. Well, I would love to have, we have 68 unimplemented items from our contract a decade ago because we don't even have the ability to enforce agreements that we have. But all of a sudden we become ALPA. We have a $100 million war chest to go to management and say, we've got $100 million to ensure that you implement this contract. That to me is worth the $1 million we might put in.
I mean, that makes sense. Most of us understand that this industry is a pay-to-play type of industry in more ways than one. That being said, do we have to make that $1 million payment or whatever good faith contribution we choose to make, is that required?
Sure.
For APA representation?
Yeah, we could say, no, we're not going to contribute anything. We're going to be pikers. We're going to show up and we're going to want everything from ALPA, and we're not going to make any good faith gestures, and we can leave a bad taste in everyone else's mouth at ALPA. Sure, that we can negotiate that. If that's the direction that the board wanted to go, absolutely we could negotiate that. But for the ability to gain access to a $100 million war chest in exchange for a good faith contribution to something that we will be pulling out of immediately does not seem to me to be an unreasonable request on ALPA's part. And it's not even a demand, it's a request.
Yeah, and I think that's awesome that we would be able to immediately start using that good faith contribution to start pooling resources to better the outcome for our pilot group. It's been made abundantly clear over the past few weeks, months, and years that we need as many resources as we possibly can get our hands on. And this just might be the pathway to doing that. So thank you for clarifying this.
Yeah. And so now you kind of have more background than, you know, 90% of people on the property of how that stacks up.
So Robert, I'd like to touch on the next claim that was put in some of these emails from our representatives. Let me quote from here. A merger would result in initial membership dues rising by 85%, while only 36% of our pilots' dues would be allocated back to our MEC from ALPA National. So our dues would rise by 85%, and we're only getting 36% of that back to spend in-house. What's the truth behind this?
With results to the raising of our dues by 85% as the committee, we went back to January 1st of 2000. So we have 23 years, and we did a month-by-month average comparing the dues rates at APA over that 23 and a half years now. And over that 23 and a half years, we have averaged a 1.32% dues rate. So the idea that we are a 1% dues organization is just not true. To go a step further, the Secretary of Treasurer has briefed the board to tell them that post-negotiations, either we are going to have a higher dues rate or that we are going to have to do some serious trimming in APA. So we currently, under our present representation, cannot sustain that model at 1%. So we're either going to have to reduce what we provide to our membership, whether it be staff, whether it be pilot volunteers, or we're going to have to raise dues. So from the start, it's a disingenuous argument that they're making. To go one step further, as we come into ALPA, the likelihood of ALPA's dues rates coming down are absolutely there. So we've done some rough math as a committee. The assumption is that it would kind of go to about 1.6. So we're talking about a 0.3% difference. But let's leave it at the 1.85. At the 1.85 dues rate, we're not talking about an 85% reduction. We are approaching of 52%. Okay, fine, fair enough. What the questions that I hope that we will answer in future podcasts is there a 52% dues increase? And does ALPA provide that increased value?
Okay, so what about the kind of second part of that question, right? Which is the representative's claim that only 36% of our pilot dues would actually be allocated back to the new MEC. So is there any truth to that?
What that is it's just a failure to understand basic accounting, that the majority of our staff cost would all be put onto the ANS budget. A significant number of our what would be considered national volunteers would go onto ALPA's national budget. And so it's literally just a failure to understand money's coming from a different pot.
So what I'm hearing is basically it's just a different way of doing accounting, essentially, is what it
It is a failure of those members of the board who put this forward to understand basic accounting coming out of a different line item accounting.
Okay, right, because there's some, I imagine, some departments that, you know, are currently being paid, that we're paying for in-house, that would instead be paid from a national budget, not just the local budget, correct?
Yes. An example of, I believe it is referred to STSAP, which is our safety department at APA. We pay for that. Under ALPA, that would be the Engineering and Air Safety Department, and it would be on the ANS budget. So the same, we would still have those excellent excellent staff members that we have now. They're just accounted for differently.
I appreciate you diving into that question and straighten it out, giving it some clarity. Kind of a sidebar question on my end here. So does APA have a figure as to what our dues would be increased to keep that same level of service, or any idea what would have to be cut or increased?
So right now, I don't know. But I know that we are slightly cash positive at a 1.5%. So now, theoretically, family awareness on the other side of the contract implementation goes away. You're going to see, but theoretically, contract compliance, grievances, because we're going to have to defend the contract. There are other areas of the contract that are going to go up. Also, over the course of this Section 6, we've increased the staff headcount. So we're contemplating potentially having to either dramatically cut back pilot volunteers or do some sort of reduction in APA staff count as well.
So you said we are cash flow positive at slightly above 1.5%. Is that due to the increased cost of contract negotiations, or how do we dissect that?
So the negotiation of the contract and expenses related to implementation of the contract. So theoretically, let's say we sign a contract the end of August. We're not going back to 1.5%. Our 1%. It is going to be sometime after that, while the contract is being implemented, that we are still going to continue to stay at 1.5, which is why when you see over the course of the last 23 and a half years, we average out at 1.32%.
I appreciate that explanation. I know some of the stuff we take a deep dive into, but I think that's important when we're weighing such a difficult decision. And an important decision that can affect our future on such a grand scale, right? So I'd like to move on to the next topic. The next claim that was put out by some representatives was, and I'll just quote here from the letter, the committee's report showed APA to be superior in critical areas that help our pilots daily. Benefits, air medical, government affairs, Compass Project, and others. So, Robert, through the exploratory committee's analysis, were there areas that we weren't able to either replicate, keep? Would they have to change? What is the truth to this claim?
We compared every single organization that APA interacts with and then every single organization that ALPA interacts, and it is a dramatic difference in the scope of influence. When we were speaking with ALPA, and I told them about our aeromedical team and the great work that they do, and I remember the head of their aeromedical department looked at me and he goes, Robert, at ALPA, we don't have some patent on doing everything well. If you do something better than us, we absolutely want that. We want you to bring that, and we want to learn from it. They want us to to bring it and show them how we do it so well. Now, our aeromedical advisors do a phenomenal job at getting pilots their medicals back. And that's absolutely the role they should do. The question is, do they engage with the FAA at all and trying to change policy and affect how medicals are handled? That they don't. And it's not a knock on them. They need to do a specific job, and that is get pilots their medical back. And ALPA is very much interested in the work we do and how do we do it and do it even better. So every area that we identified within our report that APA does better, every single one that we identified, there was not a single one that we saw that we could not continue to do at ALPA. On the areas that we identified that ALPA does better than us, most of them, and especially the most important ones, we are not able to do at APA.
So we would not be able to duplicate that at APA. I'm curious, can you give me an example of that?
A great example is strategic planning. So, for example, there are two types of strategic planning. There is the strategic planning of the national, of ALPA National. Then there's strategic planning at the MEC. So one of the best examples of this is Alaska. Everyone thinks that Delta cracked the code in the cycle of negotiations. No, it was actually Alaska. So what Alaska did was Alaska developed a very solid strategic plan and a very solid strategic comms plan. And so what they did is we're going to apply this pressure via our strategic plan to the company. And the company is going to do one of multiple things. We have a plan for each one of those. And when the company does that, we're going to do A, B, C, or D. And then the company is going to respond and we are going to continue to ratchet up the pressure. And so one of the benefits of being in the ALPA tent, they could call Alaska and say, what's working? What's not working? And so when they saw the success of what was working at Alaska, Delta piggybacked on all of it and used that exact same leverage. I mean, I was blown away by our membership at how when President Sisher asked for the pilot membership to show up at their local base for a visual display of our resolve in getting a contract. Was it 20-some percent of our membership showed up, which is unheard of? That shows a very strong and united membership that we care about being paid like the professionals we are. But the difference was APA, because we're on this island, we don't have access to all of these other organizations and how they're using that resolve and that leverage to bring about gains at the table. And so we write some strongly worded emails, we show up in the newspaper, but we don't really turn it into true leverage at the negotiating table. And unfortunately, APA negotiates for one. ALPA has 39 airlines in some form of negotiations or prepping for negotiations. So they are constantly in negotiations. So they are constantly seeing what's working and what's not working. No matter how much we want to, we can't represent, we can't reproduce that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the evidence is staring us right in the face as we speak. Currently, when we're recording this, we're voting on our TA 2.0 or whatever you want to call it. And the gains difference compared to Alaska, Delta, and United are clear cut and dry. I mean, there's no arguing that. Somewhere there was a disconnect. Somewhere we did not use the leverage that we had or the pilot's resolve that we currently have. And if we don't learn from this now, it's, how's that saying go? Those who forget their history are condemned to repeat it. And I'm afraid if we don't correct course now, this could possibly happen again in the future. And our, to be honest, our careers are way too short to keep making the same mistakes over and over and over.
And to kind of unwrap that a little bit more. So for example, okay, maybe Chris Wachner, who I believe is the new negotiating chairman, will have a conversation with United MEC chairman, and he may or may not share information, and I don't know how much of the secret sauce he may or may not share. What we don't have is our representation department is not in constant communication with the entire representation department of ALPA and able to see the secret sauce. So maybe individual members of APA may have conversations with individual members of ALPA, but it's not that industry-wide communication. Take, for example, our head attorney for negotiations being Mark Myers. Mark Myers is a great guy. I've spoken with him several times. Great guy. I have nothing bad to say about him. But what he does not have is that constant communication within the representation department of ALPA, and seeing the secret sauce of what's working at every single one of the other carriers. If you want to have the benefits of being part of ALPA, well, you should be part of ALPA. So why are they going to give away the secret sauce to, quite frankly, not only someone who is not part of them, but even in our communications, who's thumbed our nose at them in a pretty aggressive manner?
This is a great segue to move on to the next talking point, which is APA would be voluntarily ceding our autonomy on a major policy matters and diluting our independent voice in government affairs. Obviously, we have our own independent government affairs committee that voice the interests of the American pilots. How would that look like with an ALPA merger?
Yeah, so how that works when it comes to policy. Right now, as APA, we are on the outside. We have no influence in shaping ALPA's policy. So ALPA is the 800-pound gorilla in the room. We're the little monkey that sometimes shows up. And so sometimes we're in the room and we're throwing the bananas at the same thing that the gorilla's throwing the bananas at, and we're like, oh, look, you know, we were successful. But whenever it comes to a policy fight between us and between ALPA, we always lose that. So the other part about that is we within government affairs. So there are three parts of government affairs. So there is the fundraisers and most of the time eating and drinking with congressmen, okay? Those events are very well received when pilots are there. Congressmen like to meet with pilots. We do that better than ALPA. Then there is the second part, and I don't say the eating and drinking in any way to disparage the activity. It is vital. If you've read, I believe it's Dr. Cialdini's book, The Art of Influence, he talks about how eating and dining with people, it dates way back within our brain and is hardwired to create reciprocity within us as creatures. It is a key component of lobbying. And if you're not engaged in that, you're not serious. But then the second part, there's two other parts to lobbying, and these two we don't do well. One is a meeting with staff. One of the things when I used to be a lobbyist for ALPA that I would always do was I would have a meeting with staff in the morning, and then I would have a fundraiser with the congressman or a senator for lunch or dinner or whatever. So I would try to meet with them, coincide close together. And the advantage of that is, so you'd lay out your case to, you know, some particular staffer, and they're usually very sharp individuals, and they'd say, oh, you know, that sounds great, I really like it, let me visit with the boss and I'll get back to you. So I would go and I would have lunch with the boss. And I talked to him, oh, that sounds like a really great idea. Let me meet with my staff and I'll get back to you. And for me, I was always like, works for me, because I had met with both and I knew that if I had convinced both, I'd close the loop. So that is something that we don't do as well as ALPA. Then the next part that we don't do as well as ALPA, and that's writing the language. When we were doing this investigation, there were some people who brought some charges about ALPA not engaging in or not helping on this particular issue. So one of the things that I always did in this investigation was whenever I visited with APA, if they gave me a statement of fact, unless someone could document that that statement was not true, I took it at face value and as truthful. Anytime ALPA made a statement of fact, I made them back it up. So an example of holding ALPA responsible, when there was a particular dispute, one of the things that this particular department of ALPA provided me with was their email communication with Congress, as well as the track changes in documents to see how legislation was shaped, both in language that was added and language that was removed to protect pilots in our industry. But the problem is we only have one pillar. We don't have the other two pillars, and that's what ALPA brings.
Okay, so we would gain some of those pillars, as you discussed, with ALPA representation. However, would we lose our autonomy as an independent pilot voice if we joined ALPA?
Going into the autonomy, an example, FedEx is opposed to FAR 117 for cargo carriers. Some ALPA carriers are for FAR 117 for cargo carriers, and some are not. The result of that is, one, ALPA has not taken a position on FAR 117 for cargo carriers. And then secondly, the individual MECs are able to leverage their individual positions. If FedEx was outside of the fold, ALPA would have taken a position, and FedEx with 4,000 pilots would be standing there on their own, being opposed to potentially where ALPA's position was, and no ability to influence ALPA's position, and hoping to win the battle, whereas now they were able to influence.
So, Robert, what you're saying is we would still be able to take up our own position under ALPA and our individual MEC voice.
We have the ability as an MEC to take a position that is counter to the ALPA national position. We also have the ability to actually affect an ALPA national position because we're coming in as one of the largest voting blocks. So we're not the 4,000 pilots of FedEx, we're the 15,000 plus pilots of American Airlines voting on particular issues.
Well, and like you said, the 15,000 pilots is a huge voting block on the national stage. So it doesn't sound like we'd be losing any autonomy. And in one of our previous conversations, you were telling me a funny story about one of your previous experiences with a Congress member. Do you care to share that story with the listeners?
So kind of a funny story. I was at this fundraiser for a particular congressman. And there was a congresswoman. They're both of the same party. They hated each other with a passion.
Oh, God.
So she shows up to his fundraiser. She is so drunk, she doesn't know where she's at. and she walks in, and she's like, oh, the pilots are here. The pilots are here. I remember on my first campaign, ALPA gave me $500 to help me get elected the first time.
Oh,
and
God.
I've always supported the pilots. Oh, the pilots are here. And she wanders back out.
Oh, wow.
But that is a she was elected, I think it was in 1979. Oh, a $500 investment in 1979 was still paying off. Now, we had continued, ALPA had continued to contribute to her campaign. But that is an example of APA is going to come up with a different position, or some organization, not to pick on APA, some organization that represents pilots is going to come up and great, we contributed this year or last year.
Yeah, yeah. If we're not on the national stage making those investments,
we're going to lose that battle every time.
Yeah. Well, folks, that wraps up our first episode of the Straight Level Podcast. As always, we greatly appreciate you lending us an open mind and an open ear. We look forward to getting you new content as quickly as we can produce it. Until next time, fly safe.